to my parents, Joan and Larry, and my loving wife, Pilar. Size, we are told, is not a crime. But size may, at least, become noxious by reason of the means through which it was attained or the uses to which it is put. Louis Brandeis, Other People's Money and How the Bankers Use It, 1913. Author's note. This book is the product of more than 500 hours of interviews with more than 200 individuals who participated directly in the events surrounding the financial crisis. These individuals include Wall Street chief executives, board members, management teams, current and former U.S. government officials, foreign government officials, bankers, lawyers, accountants, consultants, and other advisors. Many of these individuals shared documentary evidence, including contemporaneous notes, emails, tape recordings, internal presentations, draft filings, scripts, calendars, call logs, billing timesheets, and expense reports that provided the basis for much of the detail in this book. They also spent hours painstakingly recalling the conversations and details of various meetings, many of which were considered privileged and confidential. Given the continuing controversy surrounding many of these events, several criminal investigations are still ongoing as of this writing, and countless civil lawsuits have been filed. Most of the subjects interviewed took part only on the condition that they not be identified as a source. As a result, and because of the number of sources used to confirm every scene, readers should not assume that the individual whose dialogue or specific feeling is recorded was necessarily the person who provided that information. In many cases, the account came from him or her directly, but it may also have come from other eyewitnesses in the room, or on the opposite side of a phone call, often via speakerphone, or from someone briefed directly on the conversation immediately afterward, or, as often as possible, from contemporaneous notes or other written evidence. Much has already been written about the financial crisis, and this book has tried to build upon the extraordinary record created by my esteemed colleagues in financial journalism, whose work I cite at the end of this volume. But what I hope I have provided here is the first detailed moment-by-moment account of one of the most calamitous times in our history. The individuals who propelled this narrative genuinely believed they were, and may in fact have been, staring into the economic abyss. Galileo Galilei said, "All truths are easy to understand once they are discovered. The point is to discover them." I hope I have discovered at least some of them, and that in doing so, I have made the often bewildering financial events of the past few years a little easier to understand. Prologue. Standing in the kitchen of his Park Avenue apartment, Jamie Dimon poured himself a cup of coffee, hoping it might ease his headache. He was recovering from a slight hangover, but his head really hurt for a different reason. He knew too much. It was just past 7 o'clock on the morning of Saturday, September 13th, 2008. Dimon, the chief executive of J.P. Morgan Chase, the nation's third largest bank, had spent part of the prior evening at an emergency all-hands-on-deck meeting at the Federal Reserve Bank of New York with a dozen of his rival Wall Street CEOs. Their assignment was to come up with a plan to save Lehman Brothers, the nation's fourth largest investment bank, or risk the collateral damage that might ensue in the markets. To Dimon, it was a terrifying predicament that caused his mind to spin as he rushed home afterward. He was already more than 2 hours late for a dinner party that his wife, Judy, was hosting. He was embarrassed by his delay because the dinner was for the parents of their daughter's boyfriend, whom he was meeting for the first time. "Honestly, I'm never this late," he offered, hoping to elicit some sympathy. Trying to avoid saying more than he should, still he dropped some hints about what had happened at the meeting. "You know, I am not lying about how serious this situation is," Dimon told his slightly alarmed guests as he mixed himself a martini. "You're going to read about it tomorrow in the papers."